We always get to have these sort of down notes in a good way. I think there's always a lot of eye candy and very dramatic things happening and big spectacular fights and really amazing things that we see on screen. And then it comes down to these characters in their interpersonal situations with one another and their personal journeys that they have.
That was Don Cheadle talking about Avengers Infinity War, the new blockbuster, I'm assuming blockbuster movie that's opening in theaters everywhere this
weekend.
Yeah,
you're really going out on a limb with that blockbuster prediction.
Yeah, absolutely. I am joined by, as always, Bill Bregoli.
Yes, sir, blockbuster.
And Bill McCuddy.
Ta-da.
And, you know, the definitive critic to talk about comic book movies and Marvel movies, who's returning to the podcast, Grace Randolph from Beyond the Trailer. Hi, Grace.
Hi, that's very kind of you, Neil. It's great to be talking about this movie with you guys.
So, listen, want to know, since Bill and myself have not seen it, but Roger Friedman from Showbiz 411 will be joining us in a bit to talk about it. But let me ask you something. Compared to the other two, how does this stack up in your mind?
I would say that it's less of a movie and more of an event. And as an event, it succeeds incredibly well.
Be a little more specific on that. What do you mean by event?
Well, it's a lot of shock and awe. Like, there's just amazing things happen after amazing thing. There's very little story, and there's really no ending.
I understand the shock, but when you say awe, do you mean like puppies and kittens?
There are some moments like that, too.
No,
yeah.
There aren't, are there?
But I will say that I've never seen so many people gasp during a press screening before.
Really? And
well, we know why that is, but you can't tell us. I mean, the whole thing that's been hanging over this movie for the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 months is that a lot of people die. And I know you can't tell us who dies, but can you tell us, were you surprised by anybody that died?
The thing that surprised me the most was that I don't think any of it'll stick. I think that Marvel ultimately didn't. They didn't go all the way.
Yeah, well, isn't that the thing, Grace, with Marvel stuff? I mean, you know, Professor X, Xavier, and X-Men dies, and then they bring him back. I mean, in a comic book superhero world, I mean, you could die, and I mean, Spock died in a Star Trek film, and then they did a mind meld and brought him back. I mean, dying isn't really dying in film, correct?
Well, yeah, but I think you can still have the moment and have them. The sacrifice and have them go away for a while. My problem, without giving away spoilers, is that Marvel didn't even really do that.
So they die in bullshitty ways that the audience will know is like they're going to come back?
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, maybe without spoiling. All right.
All right, let me ask you this. My problem with the Avengers series in general, as opposed to standalone Marvel movies like the Captain America movie or like Black Panther, is, you know, you get to see a whole movie centered around one character. And the Avengers, since you have so many stars that have contracts and agents and like, well, we've got to, you know, there's not enough dialogue for Mark Ruffalo or Robert Downey or Scarlett Johansson. We've got to punch that up. It seems like it's kind of like a check the box sort of situation. It's like, all right, we got to write a scene for this one, and it doesn't cohesively, you know, come together, which I think goes to your point where you said there's really not a big plot there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they don't seem too guilty of that this time around, in my opinion, but I think that's because the characters that I like got a lot of screen time. If you're a Captain America or a Black Panther fan, you're going to be disappointed.
Let's go back to all these people dying for a second without naming names. Is it done in a timeline where they could bring the people back in prequels or in a time and space
it's
before this movie
that
happens?
Complicated.
Oh, really?
It's not even.
But that's addressed in some way?
Yeah, well, like a lot of us felt that they were going to do some really cool, like, story twists and stuff like that. They didn't do that.
What
you
about?
Know? Like, I think maybe it might involve time travel, but I don't think it needs to necessarily.
Well, I didn't mean time travel as much as does this movie take place in a time that's after everything else, so that if they wanted to go back and, let's say, Spider-Man dies, tell it a Spider-Man story from before this movie?
No, I don't think that. They could do that, but I don't think they will. I think they're going to bring everybody they killed back.
Well, let me ask you this. They're all fighting some villain that, you know, from the trailer, the CGI and the villain doesn't really look that convincing.
No, Josh Brolin's supposed to be the best part of the movie. Am I right?
Yeah, he was great. He was really good. He had the most screen time. He had the most character development.
And he's the villain.
So once again, Neil, your spidey sense is right on.
Well, he's the villain.
That's right, Bill.
Thanos? Is that...
Yes.
Is he Greek?
Is he Greek?
Uh, that's a little too ambitious for Marvel.
Okay. All right. So does it end in the sense that do we think we're going to get another 9 Avengers movies, or is there like...
This movie is purely to set up Avengers 4.
That's what it's purely there for. All right. Well, that's kind of...
But it's not like Dallas and Pam Ewing where it was all just a big dream at the end?
No, you know, they'll do it in this comic book retconning, you know? The best way to go see it is to not have any spoilers, you know, get a big soda and popcorn and put your feet up and just, like, enjoy the ride.
All right, Grace, last thing before you go, though. You're all about watching the trailers before you see the movies. How much did this movie deliver on what you and your fans thought of the trailer?
I think that it's more shocking than we had anticipated in the trailer, but I think that in terms of... fan theories and story development, it underdelivers.
I heard that the Doctor Strange character, Benedict Cumberbatch, they gave him a little more personality. He's a little better in this one than he was in his solo movie.
I loved his solo movie. I thought they made him a little bit too much of a flippant jerk, quite frankly, but he's certainly powered up, which I appreciated.
Thanks a million, okay?
In time, you will know what it's like to lose. Feel so desperately that you're right, yet to fail all the same.
So that was a scene from Avengers Infinity War. And as promised, we're joined by, returning to the podcast, our friend Roger Friedman from showbiz411.com, where you can go to...
Dun, dun, dun.
Where you can get all the... And Roger dropped the mic, and he's not...
No, I did. I pushed it
out. Drop.
Right, and where you can go to showbiz411.com for all juicy tidbits on what's going on in the movie world in Hollywood and
hey,
beyond.
Roger,
so you saw Infinity... Avengers Infinity War. And apparently, well, first let me ask you your take on it. What was your take on this?
I would rather be in an infinity pool, actually.
Well, we both drive.
Or drive infinities. We both drive infinities.
Hashtag and, shameless plug.
Yeah. And if only they would give us a discount. But Infinity War, well, I went to the sort of New York opening, which was the only screening here. They've had several.
The all media screening.
Well, it wasn't all media, but it was movie reviewers. Were you there?
No, I was not there.
Why weren't you
there? I was invited. I was working Tribeca, but we'll get into that later.
Were you there, Bill McCutty?
No, I was invited, but I was working.
I had to work because somebody in Canada went crazy. I got called in to work.
Somebody in Canada went crazy?
Yeah, the guy mowed down all those people in Toronto.
Oh, my God.
That's when they call me.
Bill works for CBS Radio, and I was working.
No, that'll be a Lifetime movie. We cut nothing out. Lean in and tell us your story.
Okay, so
the rumor is you chatted with Kevin Smith.
I did chat with Kevin Smith. Who told you that?
Well, I have Bill McCutty.
He started to lie, but he couldn't bluff fast enough, and so he spilled the beans.
Well, talk about the movie.
Kevin Smith looks very well. We're old friends. I've known him since his first movie at Miramax, and I was very concerned about his heart attack, and he's lost a lot of weight, and he says he feels much better, and his wife looks like she's aged 10 years. And
when he's a fanboy, I mean, let's bring it back to the film.
There, like, he was there because he's a fanboy.
Was he excited? Did he think it was good?
He was excited going in. I didn't see him afterwards, but he tweeted afterwards that he really liked the movie, but he was afraid of giving away spoilers. The movie has some problems that I'm curious that I think a few other reviewers besides myself referred to in their reviews, and that is that at the end of the movie. I would say the last 15 minutes of the movie, the audience is silent, and then the movie ends, and then there's the credits, and no one moved. Not a single person got up during the credits.
Well, they have
Let's frame
usually,
this. Is it a stunned silence?
Yes, yeah, a stunned silence. It was like not only a stunned silence, but kind of like an upset silence.
Pissed off upset?
Everybody was then waiting for... The usual
trademark after
scene that comes after Marvel movies at the end of the credits, thinking that what they had just seen in stunned silence would somehow be undone during this during this scene, and we'd be saved from
an
this
upbeat,
thing that had,
happy
right because typically comic book movies and big blockbuster entertainment ends with. Kerpow, and then the audience starts cheering,
right?
And everyone's very excited. And the wait for that last scene usually is with high anticipation that it'll be funny. But now people were concerned because something terrible things happened in the last 15 minutes of this movie that are really keep getting worse. until it comes to the very end. And then you're hoping that somehow they'll go, didn't mean it.
Oh, good, good. So that happened at the very, very, very end? There was an upbeat moment where
No, so I'm saying, so now we're waiting through the credits and we're counting a lot of people who are digital artists. We counted all their names. and it wasn't the kind of...
You know who the key grip was?
Yeah, we know all their names.
There were 11.
Some people we knew were like, oh, look at that.
Right.
And then we finally come to this Easter egg scene that they always have. And the Easter egg scene is not good. It's not happy. It's not revelatory in any way. It has one strange thing in it that I don't know if we... It's not a spoiler, really, but I can't talk about it until after the movie opens, until the first chunk of people see it. But it suggests that it occurs long before this movie took place.
In the
Marvel world.
But otherwise, as Sherry O'Terry would say, not good.
Yeah, otherwise maybe. It was depressing.
I'm going to spoil it. It's Captain America colluded with the Russians.
Right, right. No, it's people who have not been in this movie, two people who have not been in the movie you've just seen, but who are from prior Marvel experiences. I can't even say, I think one of them is not even from the Marvel movies. I think it's from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And the other one is...
And instantly recognizable, these two? Or like only for the fans?
No, they're instantly recognizable, except it's very clear that they're younger than they ever were in any Marvel movie that we've seen.
I know who one of them is.
Who is it?
You want me to guess?
Yes, you can guess. No,
okay, and he won't say whether I'm right or wrong.
He won't say whether you're right or wrong.
It's little Sam Jackson. It's little Nick Fury.
Little?
Well,
like what, a child?
No, but you said young.
Yeah, young.
Okay.
Spoil it. Okay.
Like Westworld, like little Anthony Hopkins.
So was there a lot of buzz? Were people pissed off coming out of the theater?
Yeah. And then it's over. And then it's really...
Mercifully, it's over.
And then it's really over. And then there's no applause. There's not much talk. There's a lot of people leaving quickly. Of course, it's a long movie, so we had to get to the bathroom. But it was the kind of thing where, is it a standing ovation or are people just putting on their coats? And it was not... So I'm concerned. I don't know how tomorrow, when this thing first plays, how the audience is going to respond to the end of this movie. So they think it's going to be, you know, on Fandango and everything. They're selling the tickets are the biggest, you know, tickets.
Well, they're talking about $225 million weekend.
But, you know, it all depends on repeat visits and word of mouth. So, you know, Black Panther, people came out. They were like, can I get right back in?
Will this make Black Panther money, Roger?
No, this won't come near Black Panther.
Will this be
It'll be a huge weekend.
Will it be the second highest grossing film of the summer?
Oh, the summer? I don't know. It's not the summer. It's the spring.
Well, I believe this film, I mean, unofficially, is the start of the summer movie, preview season. Summer movie season, if you look at EW...
It sort of kicks off usually in May, but like...
It's almost May.
It really depends. I think, of course, Thursday, Friday will be, you know, $200 million or something.
Will it beat Solo, a Star Wars story in terms of...
You know, we don't know.
Not opening weekend.
Response from CinemaCon on
Solo?
Solo is good. And it's going to have the Cannes opening that I'll be at. And we'll see. It sounds like it's actually going to turn out to be good.
Yeah, but back up for a second. 20 years I've known you, maybe longer, and you're usually really good at reading the tea leaves. And this is the one time where you're saying you saw the movie and you still don't really know how audiences are going to react to it.
I don't know, because 2/3 of the way through the movie, you would say, oh, this is gigantic.
Because it plays well for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Let's be clear about that.
Even the reviews I read, like my review was maybe a little kinder. I didn't mind. I didn't think it slowed down ever. I thought it was continuous. And I didn't mind all the people coming and going because it was fun to see them all greeting each other and having interactions. And some of them don't know each other. And Tom Holland is a nice, he's like a nice kid. He's good Spider-Man. And he has
doesn't die. Don't tell.
Oh, I can't. I can't really.
Say this. Somebody so big we don't think they could ever die dies. Is that true?
No, it's not that simple.
That's what everybody wants to know.
Here's the problem. They've rigged it. I think I wrote this, actually, so it's okay. In the movie proper, let's say up to the last 15 minutes, prior to the last 15 minutes, there are three or four deaths that are within...
Well, that's what Grace said. Our earlier guest alluded to all that.
I wrote this and nobody seemed to mind. I said there's three or four deaths that are within the story structure. Right. So they're like, OK, I'm sorry they're dead. This is terrible. But it's in the story. But then things really go south in the last 15 minutes. Right. And so it's hard to describe from there exactly what happens without giving it away.
All right. Some very quick questions about this film. I heard.
Can I just say some good things, though? So can we just get off the Who Dies thing?
Sure.
I just
want to
say
that's what I'm saying.
That Josh Brolin is fabulous.
That's what I've heard.
The Thanos. Villain, as Thanos. And a girl today on Twitter who I know who's used to write for The Observer said she would fuck him if she met him.
Well, there you go.
Okay.
There's the ultimate endorsement.
I'm sure she's met Josh Brolin.
I told her, I said she should dial it down a little bit. Who
just
else?
Blow
I'll
it.
Tell you who else is really good. Benedict Cumberbatch is excellent.
Yeah, I heard they beefed that made the character actually better.
Yeah, better. He really sort of blossoms, and he's terrific.
Grace said they snarked him up a little, that he's kind of a little Tony Stark-esque.
Yeah, he's a little more with the program. Robert Downey Jr. looks bored through the movie, but how could he not be? Elizabeth Olsen is very good.
That's what I heard.
Anthony Mackie's really good.
Zoe Saldana.
Zoe Saldana is excellent. Chris Pratt, the Guardians of the Galaxy people are very prominent, and
has the raccoon.
They're much more. The raccoon is good, and they're much more relaxed.
You're fixated on that raccoon.
Yeah,
I like
Grace.
The
you ask.
I like the
raccoon.
One thing about them not having to carry a movie, any of them, because they're not. A lot of them are not great actors.
Ruffalo kind of wasted.
No, Mark Ruffalo's in a lot, but there's a funny thing. I didn't even refer to this in my review, but there's the Hulk has performance anxiety.
Wow.
Which is very carefully reviewed.
Interesting. Wow.
In this movie, yes.
Anger
Robert
issues?
Dole steps in.
Erectile dysfunction.
Right,
he can't get it up or whatever.
So a couple of quickies. If you're a fan of the series, I guess it's ridiculous to ask you whether you'd recommend it or not, because I guess if you're a big fan of the series, you're going to go regardless. But for somebody that is just
not going to go, because I tell them not to go.
But do you think that, like, you know, for the let's say your kid is really into this and you got to take your kid to this thing. I mean, are you going to be bored?
Your kid may
have
a traumatic problem at the end of the movie.
Were you bored out of your mind? Were you?
Oh, no, you're never bored.
Okay.
You're never bored.
How's the
CGI? And the raccoon.
The raccoon.
And the funny part about the raccoon is...
The raccoon, by the way, is from Guardians of the Galaxy. For those listening to this podcast who aren't that familiar with the entire Marvel
under a rock.
Cinematic Universe.
The raccoon, who's voiced by Bradley Cooper and played by James Gunn's brother, I think. He's the actor. The raccoon is routinely referred to by Thor as Rabbit.
Okay.
He can't seem to get the idea that he's a raccoon, so he keeps saying, "Where's that rabbit?"
Well, it was CGI, so maybe he just didn't know.
The raccoon comes in, the guy sort of snarls at him. So they have like a funny thing going on.
Chris Hemsworth okay in this thing?
Yes. I was some of these actors, like Benedict Cumberbatch, he's going to win an Oscar one day. But some of these people are very nice actors, but they're not Oscar winners. And when they've had to carry movies, it's been tedious. But now, in small portions, they're actually a lot of fun and relaxed. And Chris Hemsworth especially is very good.
CGI, okay?
Yeah, the CGI is great.
Okay.
They had the money to spend, you guys. And she called it, our earlier guest, and then we'll close it out, called it an event rather than a movie. Okay. Would you agree or disagree with that?
It's an event, but it's a movie. It's a Harry Potter on Broadway is more of an event than anything
else. Have you seen that yet?
I went to it last Sunday.
Two parts.
Both parts?
I saw both parts.
Oh, tell us about that.
Oh, that's an event.
Was it 9 hours of sitting in a theater?
It's two plays. It's two plays.
It's 5 hours, I think.
It's 5 or 6 hours altogether.
Do you have to see them both, or can you buy individual tickets?
I could have left easily at the end of the first one, but I was there. I was in for the whole thing, so I stayed.
I'm asking
a two-hour
you
break
if you have
for dinner.
To buy tickets.
No, you don't have to buy tickets to both. Just like Angels in America, you can buy just one play, the first or the second play.
Okay.
I called it Angels in America with Quidditch. Angels in America is just about an hour and a half longer than this thing altogether in two plays. But this is not, it's going to, they're going to push it for the Tony Award for Best Play.
Well, this thing's going to
really
run for
a
like,
best play.
This thing's going to run forever.
I don't know what you call it. It's an experience. And there's a lot of special effects and they're really good.
It's not a musical. It's just a play.
It's not a musical, but I called it a musical without songs because several times it comes to a point where you think someone's going to sing a song and then they don't. But there's music by Imogen Heap, who's a very good British singer-songwriter. And so she's written some nice music for it.
Did you go with a child? Or any, like a niece or a nephew or anything?
No, I did not take any children.
Do kids sit through 6 hours of Harry Potter?
Well, you go, you leave. There's
no, I see there's a break.
And they read the books that take.
And they all know the story. Uh-huh. The children all know, like, minutiae of the stories.
Right.
What they've done here is clever because it's not by accident that the thing reviews all 7 books and 8 movies. So if you know these things, there's all kinds of stuff stuffed in
there. What if you don't know? What if you're like, you don't know this stuff?
I don't know all the stuff. I just know the basics.
Is there a character like Basil Exposition in the Mike Myers Austin Powers movies that sort of comes out and explains things?
No,
to
no
the uninitiated?
Is it all the characters like a Snape?
Oh, yeah. Snape is back because they go back in time. They're going back 5 minutes, an hour, 26 years.
So the thing with Harry Potter, and my daughter loves this stuff and knows all the minutiae. So does her boyfriend, and there's a whole bunch of people. They live for this stuff, and they know that it's like a cult. They really know this stuff. But for me, you know, I like the first two. They were more simplistic.
The third one was great.
Well, that was okay, but then it started to get, like, when you got into, like, the fifth one and the sixth one, there was so much minutiae. There was so much where you had to know what was going on, and, you know, I'm just like, all right, this year or so between the movies, and I don't really remember.
This is 22 years later, and Harry Potter is married to Ginny Weasley, and Ginny Weasley's brother Ron and Hermione are married to each other. And
any
this
sex
version,
scenes? No sex scenes.
No, and now, as you know,
the magic's gone.
Did J.K. Rowling write this?
Yeah, she wrote this. And as you know, the characters were all white in the books and the movies, but now Hermione is black.
J.K. Rowling said that one of her regrets when she wrote the book was that she should have had Daniel Rat, the Harry Potter character, marry. Hermione, as opposed to having Ron Weasley marry Hermione.
Well, they have to do something for Ron Weasley to build him up because he's kind of a Weasley character.
There you go. All right. So before we move on from this one, would you recommend this would the Harry Potter fans be satisfied? And the casual viewer of a Harry Potter film?
You know, it's blazingly expensive. So you have.
It's the price of two plays.
It's the price of two expensive
really,
plays.
So each play is $125 a pop for like
$150
for an orchestra seat.
Yeah.
Wow.
So if you're two adults and you're taking two children, what is that, $600,
$800? And is it the same deal as like Bruce Springsteen on Broadway? Is it impossible to get tickets to this now?
No, I think it's possible to get tickets.
Okay. All right, I'm going to move on to Tribeca right now. There's a movie that played at Tribeca. There's a bunch of movies I want to talk about that opened at Tribeca. One of them is opening in theaters nationwide in addition to premiering at Tribeca. And it's called Disobedience. And let's hear a little. It stars Rachel McAdams, Rachel Weisz.
It takes place in an Orthodox
Jewish community in London. And Rachel McAdams is married to a gentleman who was up to become the head rabbi in the temple that they attend after the rabbi who's been there for many, many years dies.
Who was Rachel Weisz's character's father.
Yes, indeed. And Rachel Weisz.
Get to the lesbian part.
Rachel Weisz comes back. She's kind of she left the community and lives in the cosmopolitan city of London and comes back to this town for the funeral of her dad and reacquaints herself with Rachel McAdams, who we find out had a lesbian love affair when they were much younger. And there's a triangle that's involved here because the husband finds out about it. And so basically, to summarize it, it's a lesbian love story set amongst the Orthodox community in London. And here's what Rachel Weisz had to say about that.
Who needs another Orthodox Jewish lesbian film? There's just been so many. It's the most tired genre there is. I'm like, I'm done.
Over it.
I spoke to Rachel Weisz and Rachel McAdams.
And you brought the Marvel thing in.
And you
went back to the Marvel trough when you said we weren't going to talk about it anymore.
And Alessandro Nivola plays the young rabbi. And Bill Bregoli, before I give you my opinion, what did you think of this film?
Actually, I want to know what you think about non-Jewish people playing Jewish characters.
Well,
does anyone die?
Well, the rabbi, a rabbi dies.
Oh, the
very
rabbi.
Beginning of the movie.
No, we're not supposed to say that.
That's
Alessandro Nivola dies?
No.
I think Alessandro Nivola was extremely convincing. That doesn't bother me at all. I asked Rachel McAdams how, you know, did she study this particular community? And, you know, because she's not Jewish. And here's what she had to say.
Yeah, I tried to just soak up as much as I possibly could and invited myself to many Shabbat dinners. And,
really?
yeah, and learned to make some Jewish food and tried to sort of embrace every aspect of it. I got a Jewish housewives Bible full of lots of interesting little tidbits and just tried to soak it all up. It was fascinating. I really loved learning about it.
But she didn't get, I'll bet they didn't crack the Jewish community, because there was a great documentary last year called One of Us about...
I remember that. I didn't see that.
He was trying to escape.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch it?
No.
Well, anyway, so what did I think?
They can't escape the community.
It doesn't bother me at all if they do it.
Well, good, because here's a picture of someone you know playing Tevye.
Is that Bill Brigoli? Is that Bill Brigoli playing Tevye?
It is a photograph which we'll post on Twitter.
Wow.
Bill McCuddy is going to take a photo of this.
If
and
he
post,
was a rich
post
man,
this on Twitter.
All right, we'll tweet
that
out.
What did you think of the movie, Bill Brigoli?
All day long, I bitty bitty bum. If I wrote about the man.
Tickets to this will be.
You're as good as the.
Really good.
You're as good as the teeth cleaning guy. What was his name? Topol.
Topol.
Yeah. So, what do you think of the movie, Bill Brigoli?
There was
a child.
I know you told us last week you thought it was very slow, and it is slow, but it was kind of like an onion because they don't telegraph what these women's relationship is. At the very beginning, you find out there are a lot of awkward silences, which are interesting in a movie.
I went to the...
Because no one wants to talk to this woman who came back from... Rachel Weisz's character, once she was found out to have this lesbian affair, her father, the rabbi, flipped out, and Rachel ran off to America.
She left town.
And that's why she comes back once her father dies.
Uh-huh.
And she realizes that... the guy buddy that they both had married her.
Talk about the sex scenes, for crying out loud.
Right.
We've got
Rachel
Love, and I wish Jennifer Aniston had been in this because we could have had a three-way with Rachel on Rachel,
Now
Rachel Weisz is
First of all, before I get to the Rachel on Rachel Love scene thing, at the premiere party last night, a lot of people were telling me that they felt that, and I agree with this, that they should have had a flashback, a backstory, you know, just for character development on, like, you know, their relationship before.
No, I like to find this out as the movie goes on.
Okay, so we disagree. I thought it was a little flat, but it wasn't terrible. It was okay. As far as the lesbian love scene between Rachel McAdams and Rachel Weisz, the oddest thing about it was that they were fully clothed during the love scene. Now, it's not like they were...
Sounds like my prom.
It wasn't like they were in a closet in public
hands
somewhere.
Hands
go in interesting places.
Yes, hands.
Here's Rachel McAdams calling right now.
They were in a...
In a room,
total privacy. And who in the world makes love to each other completely with their clothes on? I mean, it's almost like, you know, have you seen these movies or television shows where to get past the censor or to get, like, not as an R rating or something, they'll have a love scene and the woman will be wearing a bra, a brassiere.
I've never taken my clothes off during sex.
Wasn't this about the religion, though? Wasn't it in some nod to them doing it, like, sort of cheating but not cheating?
I mean, they had full-out sex, but they were fully clothed. It just didn't make any sense to me.
Can I just ask you one question? Was there a gefilte fish involved?
there was stuffed derma.
I love a stuffed derma. But I'm near the hospital, aren't I?
It was okay. It was all right. Yeah. I'd say on my Big Apple rating scale out of a possible four, I'd give it 2.5 apples.
Two and a half bagels.
How many would you give it, Bill?
I'd give it 3 bagels.
You give it 3 bagels. Okay.
I'll
moving on.
A gefilte fish.
All right.
3 bagels and a schmear.
There is
Flunkin
a movie
in
a pot. That I saw.
Flunkin.
Okay.
Are you Jewish?
No, but I worked my way through college as a cook in a Jewish country club.
You are kidding. Where?
And I played Tevye, so I'm honorary.
You are Jewish. Where was the country club?
It was in Canton, Massachusetts. It was called the Blue Hill Country Club.
Really?
Wouldn't that be Cantor, Massachusetts?
Yeah. It was an all-out Jewish country club. I made like 150 Seder plates.
Wow. Were there any lesbians
every
there?
Year. Not that I know of.
Okay.
If there were, they were fully clothed.
So, Roger, Bill, and Bill.
Yeah.
I saw a movie at the Tribeca Film Festival that is easily the best film I have seen in a year. Not all year, because this is end of April, beginning of May. In a year. This beats any movie that I saw last year, including Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri,
or
any movie with Saoirse Ronan.
Better than Aquaman?
This is my favorite movie that I've seen in
Shape
a year.
Of Water.
It is called All About Nina, and it stars Mary Elizabeth
Who's
Winstead
it about?
And Common. It is directed by a woman named Eva Vivas. I don't know if it's her first film or not. As a matter of fact, I'll check that right now.
Can you bring some of these facts to the podcast, sir?
This is her directorial debut. I said Mary Elizabeth Winstead and Common. You got to pay attention, Roger.
Now, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, she's the one that Ewan McGregor left his wife for?
That is correct.
Was in, she's been in a bunch of stuff, but I really liked her in Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
And she's also a regular in the television show Fargo. Let me tell you what this is about. Mary Elizabeth Winstead plays a stand-up comic.
Not again.
Named Nina, who's working the clubs in New York.
This is my role.
And she's completely, she's completely messed up.
It's his favorite.
And she has an abusive boyfriend played by Chase Crawford, who you might remember.
We always just talk while he's talking.
He's got himself all pumped up. He's been working out. Uh-huh. And he plays a cop who's married with kids, and he's physically abusive to her. As a matter of fact, in the beginning of the movie, she shows up to the suburban home just to enlighten the wife that you got to get away from this guy because he's just beating the shit out of me, you know. But she moves to Los Angeles and she has an audition for this sort of like a Saturday Night Live show that takes place in Los Angeles, a fictitious show called Comedy Prime, and she starts working the clubs there. And she's a mess. I mean, she is really fucked up mentally, but she's really a good comic. And she meets Common, who's also messed up. And I'm not going to take it anymore, tell you anymore about the plot. No.
No idea where it goes from there.
This is the best performance. You really don't. You really don't.
Right.
The movie takes a lot of surprise turns.
And is it possible they have sex?
That's so minor to the movie.
Do they take their clothes off?
Does one of them die?
This is the greatest. This is an Academy.
Is there a raccoon in it?
No. This is such an Oscar-worthy nominated performance.
Releasing it? Do you know?
It has not been picked up yet. And it should be, because this is so great. Mary Elizabeth Winstead deserves an Oscar nomination for this.
Is this the first festival it's been at?
I believe so. It was the first showing. I went to the world premiere showing of this. And I cannot wait for this movie to get picked up and shown, because it is, she's a fucking train wreck, this character. And for somebody, Bill McCuddy, you do stand-up comedy, I spoke to her about this, and she said, I said, I asked her about this at the Q&A after the movie, publicly, and then privately at the after party. She did not go
you
up
had
on,
follow-up questions.
She did not go up on stage at these at
Well, neither
these
did your Maisel doll. Neither did the woman who played, what's her name, Rebecca? The woman who played the marvelous Mrs. Maisel was the same thing.
But she's so convincing as a stand-up, and you, Bill McCuddy, having done stand-up, you know how hard it is to get the timing on something like that down. She gets that down fine, but she also...
Is it better than I'm Dying up there on Showtime?
Well, that's like probably the worst show.
Is it better than Punchline?
That's also one of the worst movies about stand-up comedy ever. But
here's the barometer, because you're always talking about this movie. Is it as good as Funny People?
Okay. Well, that's interesting. That's a great question.
Is it as good as Schindler's List?
Different than Funny People.
It's different than Funny People, but it's great. They would both be four apples.
Big Sick?
Oh, it's way better than The Big Sick.
Okay, good.
It's way better than The Big Sick.
Way better than
The Big Sick doesn't get comedy exactly right, despite its lineage.
Divulge why this woman is fucked up, but because it would really ruin the movie. But she's like a sexaholic, alcoholic, and... It's just...
Sounds like she dated Loki.
This you can say. She's at the very end, after the credits, what's in the Easter egg?
The Easter egg is that you get to go home thinking about... not being able to stop thinking about this movie, all about Nina.
Who else
Nina.
Is in the movie besides...
Common and Elizabeth... Jay Moore, the comic...
Jay Moore!
We love Jay Moore.
He's in there.
That's great.
I think that's about... I think that's the only name.
For star power, that's it. Huh?
But again, I will keep you updated when this movie gets a distributor,
gets
released. And it's just wonderful.
Play a character named Nina.
Yeah, it's one of those
Good for you.
It's one of those movies
yes.
that Nina Geld. It's one of those movies that You know, we see so many shitty movies.
Her name is Nina Gelb.
Gelb, that's her character's name.
Is she Jewish?
It's not really a plot point. It's not really discussed.
Because it's making me worry that all the movies you saw this week were with non-Jewish people.
Kind of a theme.
There's nothing to indicate whether she's Jewish or not in this
movie. All right, what else did you see at Tribeca?
Loki is Jewish.
And last but not least, before we go, a movie that I talked about last week that I said I was going to see. I saw this documentary called Bathtubs Over Broadway.
Oh, yeah, how is that?
Which is terrific.
Okay.
And what happened was, again, I went to the premiere of this thing. And
you were just a little gadfly this week.
Yeah. Well, I've been spending a lot of time at Tribeca.
Well, last time you saw Studio 54.
Yes, I did.
Well, I went to the party at the Museum of Sex.
How was that?
Well, I wanted to go to the Museum of Sex.
Well, look,
so because it's on Fifth Avenue, and I'm too embarrassed to go inside on a regular day.
Did you see my exhibit?
Did they? did they recreate the
vibe? I'm in the don't part.
Was it a fun party?
Just prior to that, I didn't see the movie, but just prior to the Museum of Sex, I was at a book signing party at Fred's at Barney's, and I ran into Jean Dumanian, who's the great producer. And she goes, "Where are you going now?" I said, "I'm going to the Museum of Sex." And she said, "I have one in my home."
Was it a fun
Gene's
party?
It was a very good party. There were a lot of people I knew from Studio 54, and they had good pictures up. And they were, you know, somebody was trying to do coke in the bathroom. And
at the party?
No.
I think those days are gone.
No one can do that now, or they just collapse.
Let me tell you about Bathtubs Over Broadway. This guy by the name of... who was a writer for David Letterman. He's Steve Young. He's the focus of the film, and he's the one that did that bit, Dave's Record Collection. And you would see at the beginning of the film, he would scour record stores all over the city to find these horrible Leonard Nimoy sings Puccini or something like that.
That goes back to the morning show. That's maybe Meryl Marco idea, but that was on the NBC show.
He spent many years going to these vintage record stores, and then he said it became easier when the internet came out, you know, where he could just like, you know, there are actually people that collect this crap. But it was funny, and they were showing you that stuff. But he discovered these albums about industrial musicals. And Martin Short and Florence Henderson and Andrea Martin and all Susan Stroman, who directed The Producers and Contact and Young Frankenstein on Broadway. All these people cut their teeth doing these industrial musicals, which were very big in the 60s and the 70s. And the budget on these things was crazy. In the 60s and the 70s, they had three times the budget of an actual Broadway musical. And they'd only be performed like once for like the Crisco oil salesman or something like that. And these full-out productions, and they're hysterically funny. The reason it's called Bathtubs Over Broadway is because American Standard, which makes bathtub fixtures, there was a musical, and they show it to you, and it's like, my bathroom. This is women singing. But the people who wrote Chicago, wrote the score for Chicago,
Kander
and Ebb, cut their teeth doing this. The guy who wrote Fiddler on the Roof, all these people came out of this thing, and it was all this money, and they made a lot of money, the performers. People made a living, a career, doing these industrial musicals. There were hundreds and hundreds of them. So it starts out funny, and then it actually becomes interesting. And since, again, this is the world premiere of this thing, at the end of it, Steve Young came out, as well as the director, Deva I can't pronounce her name. I think it's Wissanat, and they performed three.
They're listening, please.
They brought
we apologize.
A whole bunch of chorus people and singers, and plus some people, veterans that you saw in the movie from these industrial musicals, and they performed three musical numbers on stage. It was terrific.
Okay.
So that
Who
will
picked
be released.
This up? Do we know where that's going to be?
It got picked up. I don't know, but look for that. I'll tell you. I'll give you a heads up on that. Bathtubs Over Broadway. If you like Letterman and Dave's Record Collection,
you know who did that for years and was like made a lot of money doing it, but didn't do the musicals, but did very famous industrials for companies, and he was huge and highly sought after, as John Cleese. If you were a company and you had a lot of dough, you paid him $1 million and he did a really funny Monty Python-esque thing about your... And they're online. You can find them online. It's really cool.
It's just crazy. I mean, it's like full-out numbers being, you know, written about Lay's potato chips. You know what I mean? How to sell Lay's potato
chips.
That's funny. And it's great.
Where was their footage of this? How did it get shot?
Well, a lot of it is still photographs with the records. But somehow, you know, if you were an actor and you weren't – and, you know, this is like – you would get a 16 millimeter camera and right. you would film the thing, or the company
dramatic
would,
recreations or, would have been
or,
funny
or the company would that. The company would film it, because you know, even though it was shown produced, you know, done live for an audience, they would want a record of it, since they spent right. $3 million to produce the thing. So I'd say most of it was footage that you were taking a look at, not right. so much stills, but on the ones that were really funny that they didn't have it, you'd just listen to the music and you'd see still shots of the thing. Highly recommended. Very funny. Anyway, what are we talking about next
any,
week?
Wait, any
I'm
video
looking
picks?
Forward to a Tribeca movie I'm going to see tonight called Diane that stars Mary Kay Place, and it's supposed to be terrific.
We haven't seen her in a long time.
She's around, but, you know, I think just, she's just a phenomenal actress, and she's never really gotten her due, and this is apparently, this may also be at least a Spirit Award kind of nomination for her. So
I guess also for fans, we shouldn't let it pass that the premiere of Westworld was this past weekend, which I saw. Did anybody else see that?
No.
I still have no idea what's going on. I have no idea what's going on in Westworld.
No, apparently
I Tribeca is not playing Westworld.
Yes, they are.
What?
Yes, they are.
They played it?
They sure did.
Oh, they gave an upfront almost?
No, I think they played the first couple episodes.
I heard from the first episode, people complaining on Twitter that there's nothing linear in it. No one could figure out what was happening.
The robots are taking over.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Yeah. Bernard is...
very meta.
Bernard has DNA.
My show is Billions.
But I never got into Billions.
I love Billions.
I hear it's gotten better, but
it's
I was
great.
Just never...
Well, we've been talking a long time today, ladies and
yes.
gentlemen.
And next week...
And
reason.
Next week, let
we
me
have
tell
Tully.
You... We've got
Tully.
We've got Tully.
Which I'm looking forward to. Have you seen that yet, Roger?
With that.
Tully, the...
No.
Okay, that's...
We've got Tully,
Jason
Overboard,
Reitman.
And something called Bad Samaritan.
The bad... The remake of Overboard looks absolutely horrific.
I don't agree.
Anna
Faris, sure looks
and
funny.
There's some guy who's famous
well, they
in...
Well, they flipped
in,
it.
In France
in the original
or
one with Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell...
that was the guy.
She, right. It was the guy that was the... that gets amnesia, that was rich, and she was the mistreated... help, and they switched it. Now Anna Faris is the mistreated help. No, wait a second.
No. It's okay, but
no,
they flipped the genre. They flipped the genre.
The guy has amnesia. Now.
Right,
the guy has amnesia.
Who's the guy?
We're in the movie.
That's
Goldie
this
Hawn.
Guy. I'm telling you, is some famous like guy over in Spain or Italy. He's the biggest thing over there. He's their Jim Carrey. I've seen the trailer.
I like the trailer.
I've heard Anna Faris. I have no idea.
But we'll tell you next week how it is.
No, he's the president of Syria.
So we want to thank Grace Randall for joining us earlier by phone, and for Bill Brigoli.
That's right.
Who thank you for singing the
sure,
selection
I can
from
do some others if you
okay,
want.
Yeah,
that's
really, that was worth the $30 cash.
There you go.
That and the fact that Neil's building has Drag Night Bingo, and we're all coming back for that.
Wow,
it's
and,
very hip here.
So different.
I don't know.
Very hip here.
And you're gonna. Which you sang? If I Were a Rich Man.
Yeah.
Right. Well,
yeah.
Next week perhaps you'll sing.
Do You Love Me or Sunrise Sunset?
Well, that's not sung by Tevye. No, Sunrise.
We want
Sunset,
guys. We want to encourage listeners.
Do you know the main song from Overboard? Can you learn that?
Yeah. And for Bill McCuddy.
I came. I saw. I guess.
And
I
what do we do every week on the show? Bill.
We watch the bad movies so you don't
right.
have to.
And Roger Friedman, thank you for joining us again.
Oh, I'm delighted to
from the fabulous Showbiz 411. Often
Showbiz411.com, where you can find out, what can you find out instead of me plugging your show?
Well, I've been following Kanye West.
God, someone needs to.
This is really something. He returned to Twitter after a year away 10 days ago. He's tweeted 175 times in 10 days. He's completely manic depressive and bipolar. No one seems to be able to stop.
And running for president in 2024.
Yes, he moved it up to 2024. He's completely lost his mind.
What's Kim have to say about it?
She apparently, he actually, in one of his many tweets today, because he's had 45 tweets today, in one of those, he said his wife just called him and told him to like cut it out.
You think it's all like a show? Like this guy's
he's
publicity.
A mentally ill guy.
I mean, yeah, because it could be like a whole strategy.
So wait. Let's ask an intelligent question then. He's got a beautiful wife and he's mentally unstable. He could be president.
Yes. And why not make him president now? I feel bad for him. He's like in some kind of weird pain, and he's endorsed Trump again. Said it's his today. He said Trump was like his brother, and he's endorsed this. Alt-right wing black woman commentator.
Because to take all the crazy away, he's a very talented guy.
He's a genius.
Right.
He's brilliant. But since his mother died, he snapped. And he's never come back from it. and things are getting worse. Anyway, so that's been like a big thing. Today he announced that his apparel company would be the biggest in the history of humankind.
Wow.
Yes.
That's good to know.
And bigger than, and he named lots of big companies that will be bigger than.
Well,
Janssen?
So it's
well, to get more of this information, so, you know.
So I've been following Kanye, and also they reran the first four episodes of Roseanne last night and got very low ratings. So the magic
may be gone.
But they're repeats.
Well, but it was so big that, you know, you'd think somebody would be watching.
But they're reruns. And they're on demand. I mean, you know, if you missed it and you want to see it, you can go on demand.
So, but
and watch.
She was beaten by an NCIS rerun.
Well,
so
I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, thank you, Roger Friedman. And check Twitter to see Bill Bregoli in which Bill McCuddy's going to post on the as Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof. I'm Neil Rosen. Thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. And probably the longest podcast we've ever done on record. And thanks for.
When I get done with it.
We're tired, but it's a good tire.
And we'll sit around talking movies again with you next week.